somebody kills your uncle, you wipe out their family. So that, in fact, that law, Lex Talionis, which sounds harsh to some people, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, life for life, is actually a minimization of retribution, because the previous law had been, mess with your family, wipe out their family. So that is a minimization of retribution. Well, there are, of course, other passages in the Bible. The Bible is multivocal. It was put together over several years. And so that you have, of course, a variety of teachings on the Bible. What did Jesus say about capital punishment? Well, Jesus is probably the most famous person to suffer capital punishment. In fact, although the Jews charged Jesus with blasphemy, which was a capital offense, would cause you to be stoned to death because they were a subjugated people under the power of Rome. They had lost the right, really, to carry out a lot of the executions that they previously had. So that, in fact, Jesus is not stoned to death, but in fact dies of capital punishment, essentially an insurrection, King of the Jews, and suffers the Roman capital punishment penalty of death on the cross, crucifixion, which was about the most painful way of putting someone to death on a mass scale. So Jesus is probably the most famous person who suffered capital punishment. But prior to Jesus' execution, we have the woman caught in adultery. And of course, you have the Pharisees and scribes. They come to Jesus with the Mosaic Law. The Mosaic Law is clear. The woman caught in adultery should be put to death, again, stoning. And they ask Jesus, now, what do you say? Again, to test him, and he says, of course, let anyone among you who is without sin be the first to throw the stone at her. Which is a good way of not really repudiating the law. He didn't say, Moses, I don't think so. No, rather, he puts the onus on them. Who is going to be the executioner? And that, I guess, is a central issue that I put before you today. The question is not whether somebody like John Wayne Gacy or this other guy down in Florida, what's his name, Ted Bundy, it is not whether or not they deserve death. The question really, I think, capital punishment is, do we want a society that systemically puts people to death? Not whether they deserve it, but whether you want a society that doesn't. Do you want the state to do that? That, to me, is the essential issue. Because whether capital punishment prevails or capital punishment is done away with, it seems to me people will commit capital offenses. Well, let me just share with you a little bit more about some of the things the Bible teaches on capital punishment. What I want to do is kind of give you a kind of a grocery list of the crimes that the Bible has subscribed or prescribed capital punishment for. You can get the death penalty for owning an animal that kills people, Genesis 9:6, for kidnapping, for giving false witness against a defendant at a death penalty trial. A stubborn son's disobedience to his mother or father is, or a child cursing or striking a parent is given, the death penalty is given. So watch it, Rahima. That's my daughter, and I'm just playing with her. But again, is sufficient for capital punishment. There's, of course, incest, adultery, bestiality, rape. How about this one, folks? The death penalty for having sex with a woman during a menstrual period. Okay. For witchcraft, sorcery, Sabbath breaking. How many of you cut your lawns on Sunday? Well, stick their heads in the guillotine. It's time to go. To claim to be a prophet falsely. Thus saith the Lord. Not really. Okay? The death penalty. How about being a Levite, or rather not being a Levite, and going to the Holies of Holies, or sacred place? You're not supposed to. The death penalty. And then think about it. The first death in the Bible comes with Cain killing Abel. And what does the Bible specifically teach on that? Adam should go out and kill the son because he killed his brother. No, no. Mark is placed upon Cain. So that Cain is not, in fact, does not get the death penalty. So that you have, again, a multivocal position in the Bible on something like capital punishment. Although I would submit to you that Jesus' response probably transcends the Hebrew Bible's understanding of it. Notice what Jesus says to the woman. Doesn't say, go back and have a little more adultery. No, not that at all. Not that Jesus says that what you've done is, you know, inconsequential in terms of its sin. He tells a woman, is there no one here to accuse you? Everyone's left because no one's willing to cast the first stone. And then Jesus says, well, I don't continue. I go and sin no more. So that, in fact, a woman who, under the law, is guilty of the death penalty, does not suffer. Well, people now say we live in a modern society. There are millions of people. The state must control violence. One of the things I'm not a Lutheran, but I do know some Lutheran theology. One of the things I do know about Luther is Luther was the main proponent of the notion of a roof or calling, that a Christian has a calling, and that the calling can be a noble calling, that a Christian can have a calling for the state, and that what the Christian should do for the state is be a calling well. Thus, if you are a Christian banker, you should have good Christian banking principles. If you're a Christian hangman, or in that case it was man, not woman, then you should make sure that the rope is of a sufficient strength, that the knot is tied very well, that the drop is just enough to break the neck and not rip the head off, that the death is clean and neat. And that is a fulfillment of your Christian calling. But Luther's not alone in the notion, at least the implied notion, that the death penalty is certainly just. And I don't mean to give the impression that there hasn't been a lot of support for the death penalty. What I want you to do, though, is to consider what kind of society we want. Because we can have a society with the death penalty, or we can have a society without it. One thing we do know is, internationally, the death penalty is considered to be, under essentially international human rights conventions, cruel and unusual punishment. Thus, if you look in Amnesty International for human rights violators, you will find the United States every year. And you'll find the United States every year because we, of course, have capital punishment. And so we're essentially considered to be human rights violators and human rights criminals on a certain length. Well, what do I want to show you? I always drag out some stuff. This is a little table. I don't know how well you can see this. That's better, I would say, wouldn't you? A little too small. All right.
Maybe back it up a little.
Put it back on this table.
Okay. I never did quite in grad school pass overhead 101. You're going to let me take the test again soon.
That's a little better.
Just focus a little.
All right, there we go.
Now focus.
All right. I'm going to blodge you tight. There's the little, oh, there it is. All right, one
second.
This is interesting, and it's good exercise, but I don't think it's doing a darn thing.
There we go.
That's better? I think that's all on our minds, but let's go for it. What is this? This is just a table that talks about the convict population and correctional facilities in the year of 1974. In that year, as in the present, African Americans in particular made up roughly about 13% of the American population. But if you take a look at the numbers of inmates in state correctional facilities, you see European Americans, the category they're given is white, as 97,700, 51% of the inmates. Black, the category they give for African Americans, is 89,700. That's a very interesting statistic when African Americans make up, again, about 13% of the population, but make up nearly 50% of the inmate population. Well, I have another little table that I think is pretty interesting. No, this is not the juicy one. I want the juicy one first. Always gotta get keep your folks away. Get the juicy one first. Alright. Yeah, that's the juicy one. Okay. Let's see. The states with 100 or more lynchings from 1882 to 1927. That does not mean that lynching stopped in 1927. It just means that this is the slice of statistics. Well, for those years, you have blacks, 517. In Mississippi alone, that's interesting. Whites, 44. Now, if these were football games, this would be interesting scores, you know. 517 to 44, 510 to 39. 370 to 164, 347 to 62, 304 to 52. As far as I know, statistically speaking, there's really only two states in which African Americans even approach 50% of the population, and that's Mississippi and South Carolina. South Carolina, for that period of lynchings, there were 9 whites lynched, 165 African Americans lynched. Interesting statistic. Well, let's take a look at the bottom statistic here. Oops, not too far. There we go. U.S. capital punishment for all offenses, murder, and rape by race, including other ethnic groups. Again, you have from 30 to 39 percentages of blacks and whites. Just about even there. For murder, actually, more whites were killed from the crime of murder than blacks. Notice the rape statistic. 10 whites were killed in terms of capital punishment, 115 blacks. Same thing, 40 to 49. Under rape again, 13. And 89. Total executed. Bottom line, from 30 to 59, for crime of rape. Now, this is not necessarily rape that led to the death of a woman raped. 42 for whites, that means 42 white men, I assume, put to death during this period for rape. 383 African Americans. Very interesting statistics.
Can I ask about the top of the geographic? And I noticed that those are primarily the southern slave-owning states, previously slave-owning states. You see a connection? I mean, it seems to me they're trying to punish the people in another way.
Yeah, but part of that is demographics. I think that there's a problem with white supremacy in this country that causes lynchings, although you can see from the statistics, whites were lynched also. And Native Americans were lynched. And Mexican Americans were lynched. But demographically speaking, the great influx of African Americans in the North took place essentially after the two world wars. So that statistics, particularly before the two world wars, really wouldn't be very informative if we did northern states, because the African American population was significantly smaller. Okay, that's the kind of thing for that. Well, oops, here's the super juicy one. And this is the one, I guess, that disturbs me the most, statistically speaking. And that is number of death row inmates by race, and then under it by victim. Again, they've done southern states, blacks, in the south, 258. For the whole US, only 337. But look at that statistic. In June of 1981, we have 337 African Americans on death row. We have 446 whites. I'm struck you when you again consider the differences in terms of population differences. The bottom one is the one that I think is the most disturbing, which is the issue of victims. In other words, when you had black and white victims, that's what this is to show you. In other words, the death penalty was given in 80% of the time for white victims. See that? In other words, in February of 1978, according to these statistics, if you're going to kill somebody, better not kill a white person. Okay. In other words, if O.J. Simpson was here, he should start sweating, assuming that he's guilty, which of course we don't know. But of course he has been accused. Whether he's guilty or not, I don't know. My point though is, when the victim is black, the percentage of people getting the death penalty is relatively small. Whether the crime was committed by blacks or whites, that's fairly irrelevant. Now, African Americans have been in this country for roughly, some came in Spanish. And we were actually conquistadors, but in terms of the slave population and significant populations, we're really talking about 1619, before the Mayflower. And who's going to get the trifecta? You can answer this question. Guess how many European Americans have been executed for killing African Americans as a victim? Anybody want to hazard?
As of when?
Ever?
As of today. From 1619 till today. So you're shooting for, what, 380 some odd years? Math is not my big thing. Take a stab at it. Take a guess.
Zero.
No? Someone else.
85.
All right, she's a lot closer than you are.
150.
You're getting worse. You said 10, and you're getting farther away from it.
Two?
Two's close, but zero's closer. Or is that supposed to be one? One. Okay? And 300 and some odd years, yeah. And that happened, I think, about 2 years ago. Finally, some European American was actually executed for killing an African American victim. Well, what am I suggesting? I'm suggesting one of the reasons why I'm not in favor of the death penalty. One of the reasons why I am not in favor of the death penalty is the question of discrimination. That is, discrimination in terms of who is prosecuted, how they're prosecuted, the types of crimes for which they're prosecuted, and then finally, for who gets executed. And essentially, Manny Merrill, in fact, is a gentleman who put together most of the statistics that I've shown you. He's written a book, which is in the library here, about how capitalism and development in Black America, one of the things he points out is essentially capital punishment is a tool to control African Americans and other hated minorities. It doesn't mean that European Americans haven't been executed. It does mean that it has been a tool, particularly in terms of lynching. I wrote a book fairly recently, came out in October, Voices of the Silence is its title. And one of the moral exemplars in my book is Ida B. Wells Barnett, who crusaded over a number of years against lynching. And I'd just like to share with you her understanding of God. This is what she shared with some African Americans who have been falsely accused of a crime in Elaine, Arkansas. She goes to them in prison, and upon hearing their plaintive prayers, she says, "I've been listening to you for nearly 2 hours. You have talked and sung and prayed about dying and forgiving your enemies, and I'm feeling sure that you're going to be received in New Jerusalem, because your pod knows that you are innocent of the offense for which you expect to be electrocuted. But why don't you pray to live and ask to be free? The God you serve is the God of Paul and Silas, who opened their prison gates. And if you have all the faith you say you have, you ought to believe that he will open your prison doors too. Pray to live and believe that you're going to get out. Quit talking about dying. If you believe your God is all-powerful, believe he is powerful enough to open these prison doors and say so. Dying is the last thing you ought to hear anything about, much less talk about it. Pray to live and believe that you are going to get out." And in fact, she got out. Although lynching continued for several years after her death, I think it was around 1931, those particular prisoners believed Ida B. Wells Burnett and had faith in God and fought the charge, or in fact exonerated and weren't lynched. But I would submit to you that what we have in our society is a society that was founded essentially violence of European American settlers who fled their homeland seeking freedom, a better way of life, all of which is noble, but in fact, through force, took this land from the occupants of the land, with the biblical notion of creating a new Israel, of being the new Israelite, being the light upon the hill. Very Christian and religious ideas, and of getting rid of the new Canaanites, and some with the idea of converting some of the Canaanites. It's been very interesting the level of violence that's been used to settle this land, and I think that's the primary distinction we have between England, which is kind of the cultural home for this country and this country, the numbers of murders. All of that goes along with the notion of capital punishment, which the English found out of law, and also gun control. The English have already had gun control laws. But it is our frontier founding, the notion of using violence to settle the wilderness, of conquering savages, of controlling the subhuman people who, in other words, my ancestors were brought here to cultivate this land and did cultivate this land. And being in control of that and having to use violence to do that has put us on a course of violence. Does this mean, and I'm going to basically just open up the floor, does this mean that in fact crime should go unpunished? Well, I pay taxes like everybody else. And, you know, I have children. I don't want to see them murdered any more than anybody else. But I would suggest to you that because of our history, because of the history of lynching, because of other salient facts you should know, and I can tell you as an attorney, people make mistakes in terms of trials. In fact, a jury trial is based upon the theory of jousting. That is, a medieval notion of combat. Your lawyer, in essence, the theory of one mission was to be your champion. You know, use the steed, his visor or whatever, to the lady waiting in the stand, and then the charge against the opponent. And it was assumed that if two knights were equally matched, that truth would out. And that's essentially the basis, the philosophical basis, and the cultural and historical basis of the trial. Of course, that's a real improvement over, trial by ordeal, but you see what I'm getting at. when lawyers for the defense or for the prosecution make mistakes in capital offenses, you don't get a second chance at it after the person is executed. And that, to me, is another argument against capital punishment. There are, of course, arguments for capital punishment. There are some people who would submit to you that, in fact, is a deterrent. A book I use in the course, Moral Issues in Christian Response, has a very interesting article by Ernest Vandenhagen, who's a conservative for capital punishment, in which, of course, he cites one study that claims that capital punishment can act as a deterrent. But, you can read that and you may be convinced of his argument. I have read more arguments that show statistically that whatever deterrent effect is can't really be established or that it seems to be a counter-deterrent. We do know some states for long periods of time did not have capital punishment, and the numbers of capital offense committed to them as compared to states that did have capital punishment, well, there was essentially no change. So, what am I essentially saying here? I'm saying that we have a biblical record of Jesus who's against capital punishment. We have a Hebrew Bible that is for capital punishment for a lot of offenses that we would find ridiculous. We do have some teachings in the Bible about capital punishment for capital offenses. I think what is true is, what kind of society do we want? And I put that to you as a proposition. Now, how do we feel about it?
Before you go into that, let's say, this may be an academic question, but let's say the United States was smaller. Let's say it was the state of Texas. Let's say it was all one ethnic group, maybe all Afro-Americans.
Japan.
And so then we wouldn't have the kind of statistics that you just showed us. Okay. Would your feeling about capital punishment be different then?
Well, I wouldn't be, I think, as determinedly against it. I guess because I practice law and know the mistakes that can happen in a trial, I've got real reservations about capital punishment. And that's even true if we didn't have the horrible statistics of blacks and minorities being persecuted in this country. It's because, you know, a jury is like a performance, and the performers who put on the best show, basically, get to win. You know, if your lawyer puts on a better performance and you're guilty, you get off. And if you're innocent and your lawyer puts on a poor performance, you get convicted. And I don't have the overhead, but there have been statistics to reveal that almost without exception, no wealthy person has ever been executed for a capital offense. Because the wealthy can hire very good attorneys. And, you have the Menendez case, which got through that. Here, these people say, yes, we blasted our mother and father to kingdom come. But, and then you have all of these extenuating circumstances, I suppose. And so, jury found them to be extenuating. Both of them got hung trials. Which doesn't mean they can't be retried, yes.
From the standpoint of the defense lawyer who has to represent the accused, it is a tremendous responsibility if you personally feel that the person is innocent, and you have that responsibility to get them off, and there is no such thing as reprieve in case of capital punishment. There's tremendous responsibility if you feel they're guilty and you're supposed to give them the best defense possible and you might get them freed. It's really a hard thing to be appointed defense attorney.
Indeed. One murder
but
trial.
But maybe not having capital punishment would be one way to ease that emotional burden for lawyers.
Yes and no. I mean, because if your client is going to get life imprisonment, that's a pretty big burden, too. I've been there. But, I mean, it is somewhat less of a burden. But still, if your client's going to get very heavy time, you're going to be very burdened. You want to get them off. What do you think? Well, most lawyers want to get their client off.
If you are sure that they're not guilty, yes, it would be a real
You are seldom sure about that, I can tell you that. people tell you, you know, they're in it. I mean, I've had people who were innocent and acted guilty, and I've had people I know, after I got the discovery from the prosecutor, they were guilty, but they acted completely innocent, so
if you know anyone,
can't really go on that.
If you know anyone who has a court-appointed defense attorney, pray for them if they need it.
Yes, I agree with that. And I'm glad you brought that question up, because in fact, from Gideon versus Wainwright, we have had in the law the right to have counsel appointed when you couldn't afford counsel. But although I never worked for the public defender's office, I worked with them. And I can tell you that although they are very good attorneys, they generally have too large a caseload. They're overburdened, much like social workers and other workers for the state. So that, in fact, you know, sometimes they drop the ball. Not because of incompetence, but because of overwork, yes.
I would be curious, out of this group, how many have had discussions in their congregations about the death penalty before or since our church has had a social statement on the...
What is the Lutheran social statement about?
We are against the death penalty as an institutional church. Now, that does not represent probably 80% of the people in the pews.
Well, how do people feel there?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I'm against the death penalty.
That's one.
Anybody want to join me?
Now, what you have to understand, for the death penalty, you can put it through.
That's right.
Yeah, nobody will shoot you.
And isn't it wonderful to be a Lutheran? You don't have to be in compliance with the church.
Anybody for the death penalty?
I have a problem with some cases.
Okay, what cases would you have the death penalty for?
John Wayne
Gacy. John Wayne Gacy. Serial killers.
Monstrosities.
Well, I have to admit, when Ted Bundy went, I did sigh in relief. I'm still against capital punishment, but I cannot lie about my emotions. There was something that felt, Ted, yeah, I'll sleep tonight. You might may continue to fight against capital punishment. So I understand the emotion. I understand the emotion. Others who are for it, yes.
If you are against capital punishment, if a person murder is convicted, what kind of punishment do you think they should be?
That's a very good question. One of the things you should be aware is that there's a lot of gradation in the law in terms of the quote big parameter homicide. So something like premeditated murder with malice aforethought, or murder, felony murder, that is a taking of a life in the commission of a felony, down to, well, you know, I got distracted and ran out over what we call an infant dart out. That's a child that darts between two cars and gets killed. So you have a wide parameter. Homicide. Okay. Since I'm against capital punishment, I'm saying even on the far end, they should be put to death. Then, of course, is the question of sanity. It seems to me that premeditated murder, you know, like the guy in Boston who killed his wife for the insurance and blamed it on black mothers, which was clearly malice of forethought, premeditated. I mean, he hit the whole trifecta of every element of first-degree capital murder. I would say life without parole, personally. I don't want somebody like that. I don't want a serial killer out. I don't believe you can rehabilitate somebody like a serial killer. I think they feel about killing the way I feel about ice cream. If you see me around that park, you know I'll strike and strike again. Sooner or later, no matter how much rehabilitation I get, I'll be back. And I feel that way about someone like a serial killer. You can send them to 100 psychiatrists and priests and have exorcisms and whatever you want. I want them somewhere where they don't get out. Now, if they're in fact insane, I'm here, I may become very unpopular, but I believe that for somebody, again, who's like a serial killer but judged to be insane, something like Jeffrey Dahmer, who ate some of his victims, I'd say commitment to an insane asylum for the rest of his natural life. I even put 1 million. In fact, you could lay 1 million psychiatrists from end to end, and that would be a very good thing. In terms of letting somebody like Jeffrey Dahmer out, I'd say, you know, gee, it's a shame, and I hate to penalize you because you were insane, but you shouldn't come out.
Okay. You can put a lawyer in between me and psychiatrist.
That's right. What do you have when you're 600 lawyers at the bottom of the sea?
Yeah.
Sorry. A very good start. What do you have when you have lawyers buried up to their necks in sand? Almost enough sand! I wasn't professional girls. I know all the lawyer jokes. You know what, he told me after class. I just makes me high. Other ideas about capital punishment, though? Four. Give me an argument for it.
I think
you said serial killers. What do you say?
I think that the work of discrimination, and discrimination is bad in many instances. It's bad in all instances. How about the discrimination that we as a people have against and discriminate against the victim?
Well, now, I mean, I'm not saying victims shouldn't be protected.
The question is, it's too late to protect them if he's dead.
Well, I'm not saying that people who commit crimes should go unpunished either.
And what do you call cruel and inhuman punishment? Behind bars or death?
Well, I'm trying to be clear. Behind bars, very long periods of time.
Is that 6 years?
No, that to me is adequate punishment. That's not cruel or inhuman.
Do people belong behind bars? Is that a normal thing? Then is it unusual?
I think for something like capital murder, yeah. For capital murder, now the spouse who comes home and finds their spouse in what they call it, in flagrante delicto, or I don't know what the Latin is, but you get the general drift, and pulls out a pistol or picks up a knife and kills the other spouse, should still, in my opinion, go to prison. Not necessarily for the rest of their natural lives. How are we doing? Same way like there? Not saying you agree with me, but you're saying that if you commit a premeditated murder, you should die. And what I'm asking you is, why? I'm not arguing.
Let me say that there are too many do-gooders around, and they're getting to be more. And let us offer the rights of the individual as long as he's not the victim.
Okay, now I think what you're saying is that anything less than capital punishment for capital offense is insufficient punishment. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, at least I understand you. Good. That's good. Okay, yes.
Well, I'd like to add a little bit to what he's saying, too. I'm not so sure that being behind bars is, in every sense, punishment. All we've taken from them is their freedom to come and go as they please. But isn't it true that their rights are very much protected? Some of them have been able to get degrees while they've been in prison. They can watch TV. They eat better than a lot of people on the streets do. And these are people, I guess in my opinion, those who have tortured, molested before they killed, absolutely terrorized their victims. I remember watching something about a case where they made them drink acid and poked pins in their ears before they killed them. I guess I don't see that those people should have any rights at all. They've taken away every possible right from their victims. And I don't see that they should even have the most basic human right, and that's life.
I understand your position. My question is, though, do you want a society that, you know, we can get Torquemada. We can get somebody and have certain prisons and throw out the Eighth Amendment about cruel and unusual punishment. And if you tortured a victim, I know, like, some guy raped a woman and either before he did or after he did, he cut off her thumbs or something disgusting. And we could mutilate people, torture people. And we have, you know, we have all the apparatuses we need, and we can pay tax dollars for that, and train people for that, and have that at every prison. I'm just, you know, that doesn't sound appealing to me, but it seems to me that that would be the only way that you could have a system in which, you know, the punishment exactly fits the crime. Now, whether you want your tax dollars spent on that, I don't know. Maybe you do. But I see your point.
One theory I've heard is that what you need capital punishment to stop people from taking the law into their own hands, because they'll be upset if they don't see sufficient vengeance. Does that?
Well, you know, as African Americans, we had 300 years of people taking the law down.
That's right.
So, and that one is really not appealing. But I see your point. It seems to me that people will lose faith and become more violent if the system of justice does not somehow punish wrongdoers.
Right, that's the...
Now, I agree with that. Whether or not the punishment has to be to the extent of capital punishment is another question. One of the things I also know as a lawyer, and having done some trial work, is that mistakes are made particularly with what they call personal identification cases. And the reason why personal identification cases, particularly in capital punishment, leads to so many cases of miscarriage is because the victim genuinely thinks that the innocent person committed the crime, or a witness. They see someone who looks exactly like you, and that person really did shoot the 7-Eleven store salesman, and you were arrested because you really do look like the person that did it. And, you know, you may get convicted there and then executed because someone did commit a very serious offense. It wasn't you, it was somebody who you looked very much like. And unfortunately, that happens more frequently than I think we'd like to admit. Personally, some people don't find that to be that troubling. You know, if 2 people out of 100 are falsely convicted and executed, hey, no system of justice is perfect. That doesn't satisfy me. That does satisfy some people. Other arguments for capital punishment, yes.
Well, I just want to speak to the fact that capital punishment is statistically not a deterrent. I think it's because of the way it's handled. How often, I mean, how many times can they appeal, convicted murderers, appeal, until it's been 15, 20 years until the appeals finally run out. If we parented that way, or had any other theory where we use discipline that way, we would have no control at all. And that, I think, is the big problem why it's not a deterrent. I think if it were used, and I know that there are innocent people that are found guilty, and there should be maybe one appeal, but to have several appeals, I think, is redundant. Mm-hmm. And I think it wastes millions, and if not billions, of tax dollars every year.
Well, a lot to be said for that.
And that's not.
On the other hand, that the fact that people can appeal makes me feel a little bit better about capital punishment. You know, I worked with, State versus Washington. I was a gentleman who locked up in Raleigh State Prison when I was still in law school. I filed an appeal in public court. Fairly frivolous, but, you know, a little meat there. And we lost. Last I heard, John was still locked up. But the appellate process makes me feel a little bit better about capital punishment than if we didn't have that. One thing I do know is that capital punishment is extremely expensive. To keep people in more or less isolation on death row is very expensive. And in fact, having appeals for death row inmates does tie up our federal courts. These are things that I think are irrefutable. you know, some people I think have the response you do. Let's cut down on the appellate process. And some people have the response that I do. Let's cut out capital punishment. So, you know, sometimes people can look at the very same statistics and figures, the very same conclusions, or rather results, but come to different. Other arguments for capital punishment.
Well, let me ask you this question. I don't understand your position. You're opposed to capital punishment.
Yes.
But you're in favor of having the fellow put away for life without parole. From a practical standpoint, what's the difference? He has lost all his rights, privileges, and whatnot. He's kept in a place with very restricted. He's lost his freedom and so forth. I guess I don't see much difference between that and what we call capital punishment.
That's a very good point.
Well, I get it.
Well, for me, I've been in several prisons. I'm not as resident. But I've done a lot of work in prisons, and I guess the thing I've seen is that sometimes people can have significant lives in prison. In fact, in Raleigh State Prison, which is a maximum security prison in New Jersey, everyone, guards and everyone else, will tell you the people to watch out for are thieves in terms of doing violence in human prison. That general murderers are fairly safe to be around. And I found that to be my experience in terms of people who were pleasant and sociable. People who had a stronger understanding around them. Yeah, I'm closer to this gentleman in the notion that you really have to seriously punish people. I just don't go quite as far as saying you need to take their lives, but I would not lay awake nights, you know, thinking that because someone killed someone that they would be locked up for the rest of their life. That doesn't disturb me at all. And the notion that they get education and whatnot, particularly for something that's not a capital offense and therefore not a crime that should be imprisonment without parole. I would much rather have a parolee or an ex-offender who had a college degree and some skill and the possibility of getting a job than somebody who didn't. Therefore, might feel really compelled to mug the fool out of them because they couldn't get a job anywhere, and I'd rather pay the tax dollars and have them get an education personally. For the purpose of those who are not incarcerated for life to be able to refit into society. Okay? You see my point there?
No, I don't, but you're incarcerated for life, that's what you said.
Well, for some people, for some capital offenses, we're not just talking about manslaughter. We're talking about something like premeditated murder, the whole shebang.
Well, I think what you're saying, though, again, maybe we need to come back to that again about what kind of society do we want to live in. One seems to me less violent than another. I mean, how much violence as a society do we want to perpetuate? And that's the question we have to ask ourselves. Are we doing that by continuing this process? All of the industrialized countries of the world, I guess, except South Africa, at this present state, no longer have capital punishment.
That's
correct?
That's correct.
And so, we think that we can learn from other people. We don't have the answer.
And all of them also have lower murder rates.
So we have something to learn from other people. This isn't just, we can't claim this to be the best answer because it's our answer. We might be willing to learn from others.
Yeah, and even if that's a coincidence, that is, that other industrialized Western nations have gotten rid of capital punishment and have lower rates, even if that's a coincidence. I like to create that coincidence. Yes?
I have, I'm sort of for capital punishment, but I wouldn't be for capital punishment if we would have life in prison without parole. I think my problem comes with the parole whole system, because we still have Richard Speck out there who's been in prison for 30 some years and comes up for parole every 5 to 10 years, and the one nurse who survived out of the 8 that he tried to kill has to go before the parole board each and every time and relive the misery of her life to keep him in prison, and that's not fair. She's the victim, and she has to do that over and over again.
I think the role of probation, neither of which appeal to me. I would prefer that we have no discretion in terms of sentencing, that somehow we require a burglar gets so many numbers of years, you do those numbers of days, and you're released. No probation officers, no parole officers, nothing. That appeals to me.
I would agree with that, because you also have people who go out who are the model prisoner, they get released, and within a year, they're back in prison. Crime, and it has become more violent than the time.
I have heard that other foreign countries where we're seeing statistics show less crime, they just don't hold things on the books as long as our country does. That's why they look so good.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that, because Amnesty International does look at other countries, even though they don't want to release that. That's why the United States and China are in trouble with these foreign capital punishment. Yes.
I'd like to see us do like they do in Nepal and in Mexico, where if you're put in prison, you eat. If your family brings you something to eat, you get dressed, you have clean clothes. If your family sees to it,
and the tax dollars don't do all that. There'd be a lot fewer people in prison because everybody would be seeing to it that all their family members were keeping ship shape so they wouldn't have to bother to go down to prison to give them their food and wash their clothes, etc.
Something you said for that. Let me bounce one thing off you. Since we do have Jesus opposing capital punishment, particularly with a woman caught in adultery, and Jesus as victim of capital punishment by, in particular, a hostile state, does that give any of the supporters for capital punishment any pause for that? Doesn't stir you whatsoever?
I don't understand your supposition that Jesus opposes it by not.
Well, he opposed the execution of a woman in adultery, and the question was specifically put to him. Now, we can't say what Jesus would say about in vitro fertilization or about whether we should circle the moon or not, but capital punishment is good.
That's specifically what I'm asking. I'm just saying he opposed it. When all he said was, whoever is not seen, they cast the first stone. What's the opposition there?
Well, the opposition there is he could have said, yeah, picked up a stone and started throwing it at him. One of the Pharisees and scribes, and I guess we'd have a really different New Testament. But
he didn't want to play into their hands.
Well,
he threw it back into them.
Yeah, that is within the possibility of construal. I don't think anybody, or very many commentators, have ever come to that conclusion, but I wouldn't say that's impossible. Most people have understood that to be opposition to the death penalty. And,
that's their interpretation.
Yes, sir. You're right. That is. Yes.
You know, just think more about Jesus' entire life. This commandment I give you, love one another as I love you. Love your enemies. Of old it was said, love your neighbors, hate your enemies, but I say unto you, love your enemies, pray for those who hate you, etc. I have trouble seeing how when we take the gospel just bring it down to any particular story, how we could say that Jesus would be for capital punishment. I have trouble seeing that, so Daryl, I agree with you.
Thanks. most commentators do come to that conclusion, but you know, the Bible is, and Luther was one of the priesthood of all believers, that there can be an individual interpretation of the Bible. And I'm for Luther to that extent, that no one has the absolute interpretation except the Holy Spirit. Yes?
Well, we have one of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, and that's what bothers me, and that's why.
Yeah, but I can tell you that was never understood to be an argument against capital punishment.
Oh, wasn't it?
No, not against capital punishment. That was an argument against killing people.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to kill. What's capital
punishment if not killing them?
Well, all I'm saying, it was never interpreted that way. When, you know, the thou shalt not kill was never understood by the ancient Hebrews to be a prohibition against capital punishment. You know, I'm against capital punishment, but I don't think we can interpret the ancient texts and the ancient history anyway. We want it to mean something.
How do we interpret the commandment thou shalt not kill in connection with capital punishment?
Well,
there'd be no argument that the first person did the killing.
Well, you know, if people never seem to read the Ten Commandments in general.
That's right.
Yes, other arguments for or against capital punishment. Yes.
I'm not sure that your discomfort with lynchings, which I can completely understand, answered my question about...
Okay.
Because I think the point that I was making was that capital punishment, or at least this theory would say that capital punishment should reduce the number of those or help to keep those from lynchings from occurring, rather than to produce them.
Yeah, I see your point, but
I'm not sure.
The only thing though that actually stopped lynchings was essentially, if you take a look at my book, you can see international public opinion against the United States. Began to see us as a brutal country which shamed Southerners into stopping lynching. That's what stopped lynching.
Now that's an argument.
Okay.
But I didn't hear you say that before.
Okay, yeah, that's the historical fact, is right. We don't want to be seen by the rest of the world as barbarians.
Right.
Yeah. Well, other arguments for or against cannibalism, yes?
This is not an argument for or against, but it goes along with what Sharon was saying about parole. Iowa is one of the few states that has for convicted murderers no parole, life in prison without parole. And many people are satisfied with that kind of system, except for the fact that the prison population has grown so much that, and it's so expensive to house prisoners, that every time it's brought up that a new prison needs to be built, everyone says, that's fine, but not here.
Yeah.
That's fine, but not here.
Sure. Well, now I'm against the parole system, but on the other hand, I'm against the incarceration of certain kinds of crimes. It seems to me if you're an embezzler, you should have to pay monetarily, but you should be out of prison. See what I'm saying? That doesn't go to the question of parole. Parole is for people who actually are in prison. And I think that if we punish criminals, particularly monetary criminals, monetarily, rather than how the paper that they're being housed, and what they did was a monetary fine, because they're all of it. Yes, sir.
Seems to me that this is another illustration of that over there. I've not changed anybody's lives.
Oh, wait a minute.
And this, like many other cases I've seen in previous discussions in this week here, what we ought to be doing is discussing ways to reducing crime. And that is within our power to do something about it. Because one of the things, in my opinion, that causes us, Japan and people like that, to have less of this is because they don't let things get away from them. They got laws that they enforce down at the bottom level.
It's immediate.
Well, someone between immediate and prompt.
Yeah, and that's our problem. That's our biggest problem.
You go and look over there with all the traffic there. There are no dents, crack tail, truck lights, lit lights in there. Because they've got some traffic laws over there, they've got driver's license laws that they stretch picture and you can imagine. And so they don't have that. I suggest that that's a real problem, rather that's a real thing of them, instead of worrying about whether they're their favorite capital punishment or not.
There's a lot to be said for that. Yeah. I'm much more in agreement with you on that than what we discussed
previously. We haven't changed anybody's mind here now.
I disagree with you vociferously on that, and I will not change my mind. I'll just have a little fun. We're over time, folks. One last comment.
Oh, I was just going to say, next time we have a discussion, who is for and against Caney?
Show of hands.
All those in favor of Caney, sir? Thank you for your time and attention.